This week in Retronauts, I'm gonna kill Praxis. Hello, welcome to Retronauts number 488, I think. That's the number I've got on here, and I'm not checking. So if that's wrong, then we're going to have to redo the whole order of all the episodes to make it right. Today's episode, I'm just going to sort of steamroll straight into it, I think. I'm joined by two very excellent people, and I think that the best way to do this would be alphabetical order, or in the order that we're stacked on Zencaster here. So first of all, I'm going to say hello to you, John.
Hello, Stuart. It's good to be back and talk about these excellent games today.
Hello. And also with us, beneath John, only on Zencaster, not in terms of status or anything like that.
Hello, I'm Thomas Nickel. I am a good friend of John's. I am a German games journalist and games lecturer. And this is my second appearance on Retronauts, which I'm quite happy about. So yeah, nice to be here.
It's lovely to have you both. It's all very lovely. It's all very lovely and relaxed. And today we're talking about some very chill games as well, I think, to go with the, chill in the sense of being like hideously difficult at times, but, still kind of chill. And, you know, honestly, I was surprised when I raised the idea of talking about these games. I'm not going to dance around it any longer. You already all know what it is because it'll be on the feed. We're talking about Jak and Daxter. And I was a little bit shocked when I put out the feelers to say, hey, who wants to talk Jak and Daxter on Retronauts? And I was met with essentially a quiet, peaceful kind of relaxed silence.
Did you hear any crickets chirping or did you see any tumbleweed going by?
I could hear the distant flutter of a flut's wings. As, there you go. That's my tie-in to the game's lore there. But I was a little bit surprised, but what it did sort of sell to me is these games came along at kind of a weird time and a weird kind of tone, but we'll get to that, I think. I don't think there's ever been a series that I can think of that has taken as hard of a left turn as this one did. And that's not necessarily a negative. Your mileage may vary on that, but I think it's best just to kind of dive straight in with the basic first game, which would be, of course, Jak and Daxter in 2001, released on PlayStation 2, which was a game that was, my understanding is that it was started on as named Project Y, and that was while Crash Team Racing was being developed, so pretty early days, because that was, what, 1999? Though I believe it was, I get some conflicting information there, because apparently it was in development for 4 years, but that doesn't quite add up if it was begun then, so I suspect that it was maybe slightly longer.
Yeah, from what I understand, you know, they started like pre-production and sort of imagining what it was going to be before that point, but it was in 1999 that they got, from what I've read, the very first PlayStation 2 development kit to reach North America. So
lucky.
They were very early to that party. Apparently it was kept under lock and key. So
yeah. I think there was a lot of tinkering going on just to get this tech right, because, I mean, for Naughty Dog, this was a whole new affair in terms of approach to the whole world design.
Yeah. It was, yeah, the big thing, the big gimmick, it's not a gimmick, but you know what I mean, of this game was, I believe it would be one of the first, if not the first, to have a big sort of streaming, like, I'm not sure if streaming is the right word, but just a huge interconnected kind of open-ish world. I mean, it's not really open world. It's kind of linear stages joined together, but to an extent.
It's not the first, obviously, but it is definitely one of the most ambitious, right? Like, we'd actually seen stuff like this with Legacy of Kain: Soul Reaver.
Yeah.
I guess I always felt that Jak and Daxter was sort of an extension of the N64 style platform game.
Absolutely.
But
yeah,
with new technology powering it, because Naughty Dog couldn't do this on PlayStation 1, and you could kind of tell that they probably wanted to, you know. Yeah. Crash was very much, it was linear, not just for the game design, but out of like necessity. Yeah. The way they render those stages, you know, they're doing a lot of like polygon calling and stuff to very carefully hide things, so they're reducing the amount of polygons drawn. But for this, they're like, nah, we're gonna do what we could not do on the PlayStation and go really big.
Yeah, you know, it feels a bit unleashed to me. Finally, they can do what they wanted to do the whole time.
Yeah, it's, well, if you look at Crash Bandicoot 3, there's a lot of visiting other bits of levels to that, which then reconnect with them, which feels like they do really want to do this, but they have to do it within this framework that they've got that's reasonably restrictive. With, you know, the gem stages where you'll end up halfway through, like, the Hang 'em High stage when you finish this gem path, and then you know how it is. You all know how Crash is, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean, Jak and Daxter, the first one, is very Crash Bandicoot with your moveset and the feel of it and some of the creature designs and stuff. But the game I think it's the most like is Banjo, Banjo-Kazooie or Banjo-Tooie, except kind of with knobs on, because, like, Banjo-Tooie had, I'm not sure if that's the same year or the year before, it had this same similar kind of open world, and the fact that you could go into a space in one stage and end up in a completely different stage. And it was actually really impressive at the time. But of course,
that's actually a really good point, Stuart, because Banjo, games like Conker, these were still coming out on N64 around the time of Jak and Daxter, right? The N64 was hanging on for dear life. I think Banjo-Tooie was 2000, but Conker, I believe, was 2001. So
no, Conker was definitely before Jak and Daxter, because when I think back what I worked back then, back then in the day, I was working for a magazine called Players, which was a PS2 magazine.
Yeah.
And one of the last things I wrote was a preview for the first Jak and Daxter before I left due to something good with my life. And at that time, I already owned a copy of Conker, so that's definitely older.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Conker came out earlier in 2001, and Jak came out, I guess, late in the year. So it would have been the same year.
Conker kind of ate its lunch a little bit in a weird way, especially in terms of recognition, because that was the game that was winning the platformer awards that year.
Yeah.
Whereas because they were just like, that squirrel just said shit. Like, to give it all of the awards, give it a BAFTA.
Oh, it's kind of funny, though, as we'll get to later when we talk about another game, Conker built a lot of those movie reference things in there.
Oh,
right?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, we have to discuss that, don't we? Oh, God.
The circle is closing.
The thing about Jak and Daxter, though, that I want to talk about first with the development side is, so Naughty Dog was already pretty renowned for their technology on the PS1, but for Jak and Daxter, they essentially built this Lisp-based programming language that they called the Game-Oriented Assembly Lisp, and the big feature here was that they were actually able to compile directly onto a PS2 in a way that during development, they could make it, say, change to a piece of code and then almost immediately see the code take shape on the system. Whereas, like, in Crash, you know, they're actually, you make the changes, you recompile it, you copy it over to the dev kit. You know, it takes time just to see if the little change you made work. And they really wanted to create something where they could make rapid changes and see those results immediately. And I think that whole development pipeline that they created there for the code specifically was one of the key reasons they were able to produce such a big, complex game at that time. And that time, actually, this was the same release period as something like Grand Theft Auto 3. And Grand Theft Auto 3 was very popular, of course, but...
Yeah, I wonder if anything came of that, yeah.
Technologically speaking, GTA 3 was pretty bad looking, I would say, compared to Jak and Daxter, which was, you know, 60 frames per second.
Yeah.
You know, just these beautifully detailed environments, very expressive characters. They really pushed it far.
One thing that, I mean, this is kind of an emulation point, so it might not be entirely relevant, but something that amuses me about Jak and Daxter, having been playing it on PC SX2 recently in preparation. Well, actually, it wasn't in preparation. I was just playing because I like it. But then I thought, hey, Retronauts episode. See, that's the process, folks. That's how we come to our ideas. It has a kind of pixelish sort of blur-ish filter over it. The whole game, which on the PS2, on a CRT, or even on just like a standard high-definition television, is not noticeable, really. But when you emulate it, because it's emulating that same thing at, like, much higher resolution, it looks blurry as hell. So it's like an interlacing kind of thing. I'm not sure how it works.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I find it quite funny. The other games don't have that, but this one, it does. I don't know how it works, but it's interesting.
So I can actually explain that.
Yeah, that would be cool.
They used an early method of displaying on PlayStation 2 called field rendering, which is essentially they took advantage of the interlaced nature of TVs, And so every frame was actually only half a frame vertically. So you would have like 640 by 224 pixels per frame, and it would rapidly alternate between those two frames to build the complete picture. And during the early days of PS2 games, that was the only display mode available, and that's what caused people to talk about the quote-unquote jeggies. But after that point, more options opened up, and developers were targeting, you know, full frame buffer rendering, and by Jack 2, they would do 480p, widescreen, all that kind of stuff. So that's the reason why Jack 1 has such a different look to it, because they were using that interlaced display mode.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was Jack 2. I know Jack 3 has got progressive scan, but Jack I don't know about Jack 2.
Jack 2 does as well.
It does. It's not in the menu, is it? You've got to hold some combination of buttons to make it work.
It might be the PAL version's different. Maybe. In the US version, I was just testing it. It does have progressive scan right in the menu.
Oh, okay.
It's not in the PAL version. I also checked.
Oh, okay. I missed it completely. I need to replay the whole game again now. That's a shame. I got to replay this game that I love. Damn.
Crap.
Something I want to mention as well in terms of the whole Banjo comparison, because I do think it's essentially just Banjo, this game. It's not a criticism of it. It's something that I found that makes it maybe not stand out as much as it could have, because in terms of collectibles, because it is a collector mark, it's not a super massive major sort of collectathon like you'd get from like DK64.
No.
But like the power cells are jiggies, the precursor orbs are music notes essentially, and the scout flies are the Jinjos. It's the same exact progression, more or less. You get everything you're doing is working towards getting these power cells. You don't need all of them to finish the game, but you do need all of them to see the final ending, which hasn't been resolved in any of the sequels. Apparently, I don't think I've ever managed to get all of them, to be honest. I think I finished Jack 1. It's my least favorite of the lot, but it's still great. That's how good this series is.
Interesting. So I have to say it's my favorite of the lot, to be honest.
Yeah. It's not that there's anything necessarily wrong with it. It's that I really liked the sequels. Like, the story and such really got its claws into me when I was at the exact right age to enjoy it. So
since you just mentioned a Banjo, I think from my experience, when I played Jack for the first time, it felt like Banjo, but it felt like a very breezy open Banjo.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I like the N64 platformers. They are nice. I played a lot of Conker and stuff like that, but they always feel a bit cramped to me and a bit struggling against the hardware. They're doing stuff the hardware isn't really supposed to do in that quality. And playing Jack for the first time, it felt like, okay, though, this is what a game like this should look and should feel like.
Yeah.
With the high frame rate and this large open world that really gives you room to breathe and to walk around, and it's not as cramped as the N64 games.
Yeah, it was the first example of that, too. Like, there hadn't been a game like this at this scale that was so smooth.
It's interesting that they've created the only reason I personally wouldn't call it open world is because it's not what I come to understand of an open world, which is what Jack 2 and 3 give, which is kind of almost negative, because to say open world and me to think, well, actually, there's too much stuff to do. There's too much, like, fun stuff. It's not open world unless you're traveling doing essentially nothing for a great period of time. But no, it is in that respect like that. And there is this breeziness to it, which is sort of exacerbated by some of the missions that you do, which are just quite simple, like the one where you have to sort of scare away the seagulls so they fly onto different spots, and then eventually they'll drop a power cell for you. The weird stuff like that. There's a lot of chasing of animals in this game.
Do you know what vibes I got when I played it again a few days ago? I got a lot of vibes from Mario Odyssey, to be honest. Because the way the power cells are doled out, it also feels, oh, nice, I just found another one, without even trying to go for that. I just did something cool and something I wanted to try out, and here's my reward for that. Like the moons in Odyssey, which is a good approach, I think.
You're right. Mario Odyssey actually does tend to be more like Banjo and Jack compared to Super Mario 64, where Mario 64 stars were essentially defined levels, right? They were just... It wasn't specifically wander around, look for the star. It's like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to follow this objective. And then the end point of that level is you get a star, where Jack and Banjo and them are more like, well, they're scattered around and you're going to have to do some platforming and some light puzzling and combat along the way to kind of stumble upon them. But they're just kind of waiting for you usually.
If memory serves, while there are obviously gates, there's not that many. choke points. Like, you need a certain amount of cells to get the zoomer to get across Lava Canyon.
Yeah, stuff like that.
But, and there are a few boss battles, and I think there's like three in the game, and one of them is completely optional, which is the plant boss, the giant, like, weird thing.
That was a strength, I think you're right, where you did kind of have this freedom to just explore and have fun, but it wasn't like modern open world where it was just, you know, it felt doable, I guess you could say. There was stuff to do.
It's not busy work.
Right. It wasn't like overwhelming with stuff to do.
Yeah, even finding the precursor orbs isn't super taxing. They're not exactly well hidden in this
one. Yeah, I did that with friends. We got all of them in the end,
yeah,
which was quite fun.
Yeah, and it helps that there's quite a lot of blue eco, which makes collecting things even more fun, because they just fly into your body when you have it.
So maybe we should talk a little bit about the whole setup then, because that kind of defines where the whole series goes. But I mean, the game's introduction starts with Jack and Daxter, and Daxter is still like a humanoid, I guess you could say.
A very buck-toothed humanoid, but yeah.
Yes, and they're snooping around an island where they catch some villains up to no good. They kind of run away from that, and after an accident, Daxter gets knocked into a pool of dark eco and comes back out looking like he does as we know him now. And what is he, an Otzel?
Yeah,
Otzel. That's what it's called in-game.
Otter and a weasel kind of combined into one, not a creature. Now, I want to say something real quick just to get this out of the way. I think there's going to have to be spoilers in this episode for Jack, because I want to talk about the Otzel thing, and at Jack 3, that becomes a big deal.
Right.
And it's one of my all-time favorite plot points in any game ever. It's one of the most perfect things I've ever seen in a game, and I can't wait to talk about it, I have to say.
So, I guess I read this in an interview a while ago, where they talked about the whole Daxter. The point of Daxter was actually to allow them to create comedic moments without potentially annoying the player, and they actually cited Gex as something they didn't want to do, because you know,
yeah, that's a shame, because Gex is awesome. Yeah.
I like Gex.
No mention of Bubsy. Weird.
No mention of Bubsy, unfortunately. Yeah. But it sounds to me like they were actually inspired by the movie Mulan, where you know you have Mushu. Yeah, exactly. It was like voiced by Eddie Murphy, if I recall.
Yeah.
And they liked that idea of having sort of a character going around with the main character, sort of telling jokes and just acting kind of goofy and communicating the humor through them. And that's basically what Daxter became.
Of course.
Obviously, with the PS2, it was possible to display enough complex characters at once that they could actually pull that off smoothly.
And Daxter is a real source of like energy to this game, not just in terms of his dialogue, but the way that when you do like a spin attack, he's clinging to you and getting kind of flung around and then climbing back up on your shoulder and stuff. There's a lot to it. I mean, it kind of helps as well that Jack's, you know, he's the silent protagonist in this game, apart from some grunting. So you need Daxter to be the guy who says, hey, let's go and do this thing. Because Jack's not going to say it. He's not been tortured enough. He's talking yet.
Not yet.
You know? Oh, boy. I think that the character of Jack and Daxter is... I wouldn't say that the world, in terms of who's inhabiting it, is one of its strongest suits, because a lot of the characters you meet are essentially just, like, they'll talk at you, and then they'll give you a power cell, like, once you've got enough.
Quest givers, something like that.
Yeah. They don't stand out to me a huge amount. I mean, the sculptor and the muse is a memorable idea, but it's not like they do much sort of with him. I think it's in the sequels when they start to really sort of settle on the importance of the story, of the interaction. And it's still not perfect, but I do think it's a step up in terms of you feeling immersed. That's my opinion. I know a lot of people like this one the best, and they have every... I understand why. I truly do. I think what Jack and Daxter excels at personally is, you know, level design, versatility, the way that you have these quite simple inputs. You've got your punch attack, you've got your spin attack, and you've got your jump, but those three things combine into quite a lot of movement options with the roll as well.
Yeah, the roll jumps are the best. Those are great.
The game just feels really good.
Yeah. Something I used to love doing is this is so dumb, but whenever you're going down on an elevator, I used to like to do head slams like repeatedly on the way down, because you can get really high bounce off them, especially if you do a uppercut, because like if you punch and then press jump, you'll do a big spiraling uppercut that you can then come down with a slam. And it's just very satisfying that these very few inputs can combine into such a interesting kind of combos.
Yeah, I mean, my magic moment is a friend of mine bought it a little bit before me. He showed it to me. Okay, looks nice. Can you do double jump? He smiled. You can do a triple jump. Then he did jump, another jump, and a spin. And then, all right, I'm sold. I'm in.
I mean, the more jumps you can do, the better, really. I mean, later in the later games, you get to be able to do about 4 or 5 jumps, and that's when they really go into next gear.
I mean, to be honest, still today, I'm a Smash Jigglypuff player, so here we go.
Oh, yeah, as many jumps as imaginable.
Yeah.
Good lord.
So when this came out, did you guys play the PAL version first then? Because I was in the U.S., so I obviously played the American version.
I would have, yes. Yeah.
Do you recall if it was optimized for PAL or if it was just a 50 hertz only kind of thing?
It was perfect. It had a 60 hertz mode, and that's all we needed.
All right. That's great. Yeah.
I wouldn't have bought it otherwise.
I wouldn't have known. I would have been fine with it. I would have just been like, let's go. I don't care. 50 hertz, man. Whatever.
So what I can say about this, it had a 60 hertz option in the menu. And also one thing I noticed back in the day, it had a really good German dub, which was a rare thing back in the day.
Oh,
I mean, listening to it today, of course, it's a bit, it's German anime TV quality dub from the early 2000s. But they had some good voices, and Dexter was really, really good.
What do you guys think of the character designs of Jack and Dexter? In general, the sort of the world, Jack, Dexter, Kira, all these, the way they look. I mean, the main, from what I've looked into, the main inspiration was Battle Chasers. That's Joe Madureira's comic that they later made a game out of on Kickstarter. That was Night War.
I think quite fitting, actually, because there is this mix between Western sensibilities. I mean, Dexter is clearly one of these Looney Tunes-style characters. He could be an old Bugs Bunny short, which would be awesome. And Jack has this anime-ish look, and the female characters have rather horny designs, to be honest.
Yeah, the treatment of the female characters gets a lot worse in the next game, I have to say. Yeah. It's really not great.
But it starts out like that already, so the seeds are laid.
Yeah, I mean, the designs are, they are what they are. I think it's perfectly fine, but they work exceptionally well for a platform game. And by that, you know, just running around, you need the proportions of the character need to feel right for the game to feel right.
Yep.
And I think Jack actually nails this really well. Like just to his overall like silhouette and the animation, it makes it feel good to play. And that's kind of the key. But as you see him in cutscenes, you know, it's going to vary from person to person, but they are at least very well animated, which is, I think, the key there.
Yeah,
the thing
absolutely.
Is, Jack is very bouncy when you play him, and I think that makes a lot of that great feeling when you play it. Lots of stretching, lots of squashing, and he feels energetic.
It's sort of coming. It's a lot more fluid than Crash Bandicoot ever was, I would say. It feels like a big step up from that for me personally, in terms of character movement. It's not that I don't love Crash and I want to stroke his little head. I do, but. I think Jack is a better platformer. Is that a controversial thing to say?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, good.
Me neither.
And this game did reasonably well. It was on Platinum, and it sold. Do we have sales figures for this game?
I did find something. I found a figure at about 4 million.
See, that's quite a lot of games. Yet it feels like it should be more. You know.
Well, I think you know. It's just the bar has been raised so much in recent years, right? There was a time where selling 1 million copies was like, whoa, it's huge numbers. But now that's considered, in some circles anyway, if you're Square Enix, that's considered a bomb.
If you're a Western Square Enix publisher, at least.
Oh, right. If you were part of the Western Square Enix team,
There's different
It
levels.
Underperformed. It didn't reach expectations.
Was it Avengers that did really well and they still said it was a failure?
I think it was Tomb Raider.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, the Tomb Raider game sold well, but, you know, not to their expectations, of course.
Jeez, I don't know.
So, yeah, four million isn't, you know, it's not huge by today's standards, but at the time, I think that was a fair amount. And it was a very big game. But also, if you guys remember, the fall of 2001 in and of itself was just one of the greatest release periods of all time, I think. I mean, that whole, like, 6 months... from like summer through December. I mean, we had you know, Jack, of course, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3, and Metal Gear Solid 2, Final Fantasy 10, Klonoa 2, you know, Eco, Silent Hill 2, Devil May Cry, Ace Combat 4.
Yeah.
All this stuff happened. And the launch of the new systems, like Xbox with Halo and all this stuff.
I would say Klonoa really ate into the Jack sales.
I don't know about that. I wish.
Yeah, but also one thing about this is I think that it might be the wrong game on the right platform in a way, because on PS2 was this big, expensive, high-tech device, and Jack, without being in any way derogative, feels more like a kiddie game, and I don't think the people who splashed all that money wanted something cool and grown-up and maybe a bit violent. I think that's one thing.
I'm not sure I agree with that, Thomas. If we're talking modern PlayStation, yes. But PlayStation 2 was still that era where Sony was creating stuff for everyone. You know, the Japan studios, it wasn't called that yet, I guess, but
yeah.
They had so many unique creative ideas coming out of Japan and in their US studios, and that stuff was selling well. I mean, Jack, Ratchet, and even Sly were all huge sellers.
That's something that makes me sad, is the fact that Sony had four brilliant platforming franchises, as you mentioned, Jack, Ratchet, Sly, and, you know, Ape Escape.
Absolutely.
And they're all dead except for Ratchet, which may as well be dead because it's rubbish now.
It's really, yeah, I mean,
your mileage may vary about Ratchet. That's slightly uncharitable.
Modern Sony is not what it once was.
We were eating good this year at this time.
Yes, we were. But one thing I do want to talk about on a down note is actually the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
And so I actually felt weirdly misled by this. When the game was first shown at E3 with a rather mind-blowing trailer for the time, they used a song that I wasn't familiar with yet called Ademus by Carl Jenkins. And this was actually recorded for a Delta Airlines television commercial from 1994, right? But I wasn't familiar with it, but it's a surprisingly good piece with like vocals and it sounds awesome. And they use this for the trailer and they timed the gameplay to the music. And I'm thinking, oh, so this is what it's going to sound like. But then the game comes out and it's just this kind of, I hate to say it, but it's this very generic sort of like jungle drum beats.
Yeah, it's that you know what it reminds me of? You know when you finish Yoshi's Island and the title screen turns dark? It's the music that plays on that title screen.
It's just very repetitive and not...
No, I mean, it's just more Crash music in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm sorry.
The Crash music was awesome. It was all
Crash
like so...
better. This is like Crash music, but it never gets started.
Think about like the music in Crash 2 when you're on the jet board thing and it's like... It's so good.
It definitely, yeah. I mean, I would say that it got it's worse. It's a step down.
I think there should be a Retronauts karaoke episode where it's just people singing the music from games that they like. I'm gonna pitch that. All right, sorry, carry on.
But so apparently the music was done by Josh Mansell, who has done. He did all of Naughty Dog's game music up through Jack 3. And also worked on Interstate 82, which is interesting, if you guys remember that.
I remember Interstate 76. I didn't know that there was
Interstate 82. They made a sequel.
Blimey.
It was based in the 80s, and it was less good. But
oh, dear.
But yeah, so that's... I feel that the soundtrack is the one area where it falls down. And I always kind of look at platformers. I like to use the pillars comparison, where it's like you have the gameplay feel, the visual presentation side of things, and then the music. And I feel like music is critical to the absolute best platform games.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Absolutely.
And it's the one area where Jack, which is otherwise amazing, kind of falls down.
Now, I'd say Jack 2 goes some way to making that less of an issue with its very dynamic sort of soundtrack, but it's still not exactly
I think 3 is, we'll get to it, but I think 3 is the best of the bunch in terms of music by far, but yeah. I mean,
should we talk about Jack 2 if we said enough about the original, do you think?
Yeah, I think Jack 1, as we've talked about, it's a fairly basic thing. It's that N64 style platformer.
Yeah.
Large open world. This really showcased Naughty Dog, like, coming up in the world in terms of the technology, and it's sort of the first big step towards where they are today.
Yeah, maybe one more thing about Jack 1 is when you played it again, how did you feel about the camera?
I mean,
I was okay with it because I don't mind. I'm used to the inverse X whatever, or Y, I forget. I never remember which is which. I'm an idiot. The inverted camera, I mean, you can actually change it with a really obtuse... I think it's hold L3 and press, like, a triangle or something on one of the menus, and it inverts it. It doesn't tell you it's inverted. It doesn't make a sound or anything. It's just that is how you do it. It's something R1 and L3, I think, something like that.
Huh.
But it also tends to get stuck a bit in the scenery sometime. That's what I noticed.
Oh, really? Yeah, I'm sure that's true. I just haven't noticed it myself.
I think it's just cameras are difficult, right? And back then they hadn't really been solved.
Hmm. That was definitely an issue with Jack 2 for me, was the camera getting caught on all of the, like, buildings and stuff, but yeah.
I will say that it does, the camera work feels very smooth with the way it moves through the world, so even though it sometimes gets caught up, it just has this very fluid sensation as you move around. It's satisfying, and, you know, it's not fully right stick yet. Like, it does have right stick left and right, but not, you can't look up and down, which I think is perfectly fine,
I suppose. When you guys were playing Jack and Daxter back in the day, were you thinking at any point, man, I wish I was shooting these animals and not just hitting them with my hands?
No,
I wish I was blasting them. Yeah. Well, you know, you got your chance just a couple of years later when Jack 2, or if you're PAL, Jack 2 Renegade, which is a really strange name, was released, hugely hyped in the magazines at the time. I remember magazines like PSM2 really just like 10 pages. Look, you've got a gun now. It's actually good now. You can steal cars and do crime. Yeah, that was a big thing back then. And the problem is that in doing that, they kind of inarguably alienated a lot of their fan base. And I think that's kind of a testament to the game's sales, which were quite a lot lower. And the fact that whenever you mention Jack 2 online nowadays, someone spits at you. Really just a disliked game, and I don't really get why. I really truly don't understand, because I thought it was awesome. I had a fantastic time.
We're all in agreement here that it's actually a very good game, and hopefully we can communicate that.
Yeah.
But I do actually understand why some people might not like it.
Oh, absolutely, yes. It's very
cool. I guess we should start then, right? So this game kicked off development just after the first Jack and Daxter, and I love that they just went straight to Jack 2 instead of, they dropped the and Daxter part. It's like, you know, Gears of War got there with Gears 5, but Jack's just like, now we're just going to cut it all off, like, right here. So it's Jack 2. That's probably why they felt the need to add the Renegade on in the UK, because they're just like, what's with this name? But
yeah, what's a Jack?
Exactly.
It's always a Renegade. I understand now. Have my 40 pounds.
Exactly. So as I mentioned briefly earlier, Grand Theft Auto 3 came out 2001, obviously a very big deal, mm-hmm. and sort of reshaped what people expected from games in general. I think it was sort of the first in the modern style open world design.
Yeah.
And it did it pretty well because the world was still constrained enough that it didn't feel overwhelming or annoying. And, you know, it sold a lot. It immediately got a sequel with Vice City not long after. And it's pretty clear that Naughty Dog took inspiration from this with some of the decisions with Jack 2. We're like, well, we want to tap into that. But as I think we'll get into, it doesn't exactly copy Grand Theft Auto. It is its own unique thing. And I think it works perfectly well given that.
The change in tone, I mean, I think it was mentioned, it was either mentioned before we started recording or at the beginning, but it's difficult for me to think of a series that has taken such a hard turn as this one did. And yet I don't feel like it is a too much of a step away from Jack. I think the way that they get here is quite, I don't know if logical is the right word, but they did think about it. Like, it does work for the storyline, the way that they get to this world, that what it turns out this world actually is, the way that you'll stumble across areas from the original Jack and Daxter.
Right, right.
You know, but different. It is satisfying, I think. There is a sense at times, what with the vehicle pinching and, you know, the jetboard grinding and the racing and all the sort of little mini games that you can play, there is a sense of the kind of later, I guess you could call it Sly Raccoon 3, kind of a slight movement away from platforming, but that would be unreasonable to say that this game doesn't have platforming, which is what a lot of people do say. Because there's clearly loads of platforming, and it's also awesome.
I'd like to ask you guys for a second, when Jack 2 came out, were you in any way active in the games industry, or were you experiencing the game as purely from a player standpoint?
Just from a player standpoint, personally. Same. Although I bought so many games back then, I probably was sort of part of the industry in a sense.
You kept it afloat.
Yeah, essentially, through buying secondhand games from Game. Buy two, get one free, mate. Awesome. So, halcyon days.
The thing is, for me, when Jack 2 came out, I was out of the industry for 1 or 2 years because I left that magazine to study something. And Jack 2 is the game that brought me back into the industry because another company asked me, since I was at the same place that they had the office, if I would be willing to play Jack 2 and make a complete walkthrough of the game. I have 2 or 3 weeks to finish the whole game.
Oh my god.
I said, yeah, sure, I mean, I played Jack 1. Jack 1 wasn't too hard. Sure, I can do that.
Oh my god.
And yeah, then I started going to work on that game, and I noticed quickly this is something entirely different. And this can't be done in 2 or 3 weeks, and this can't be done in one go, so we had to split the whole thing up, and I was basically cursing my way through most of the missions at some point and hating every second on it. So it took me a while to get back to it and play it under normal circumstances to enjoy what it really does.
That's interesting you mentioned that, because I've just remembered when I first got Jack 2 when I was much younger, it was off the strength of the reviews it received and the huge amount of hype that it got. It was like getting 90, 92, really high scores.
It got very high scores.
And I bounced off it quite quickly because of that difficulty and because of the change in the driving. And I was at that time, I was in my burgeoning crotchety, I only want to play colorful, cool Nintendo like games kind of mode, which I thankfully grew out of. But when I eventually repurchased Jack 2 a couple of years later, I got really sucked into it. Like, super worked for me. It got its hooks in me hard. The fact that Jack has a voice now, thanks to being tortured with Dark Eco for 2 years, I think it does actually make the game better. It makes him, even though he's not the most interesting character at this point, At least he's a character now. You know?
Yeah, he doesn't need to be, right? Because he is the player character, and, you know, Daxter and the others bring more personality to it, and he's just kind of reacted to it and given his own thoughts. And
yeah,
I'm glad they brought that forward, because the silent protagonist thing for Jack 1, which was, you know, as they admitted, was kind of made popular by games like Half-Life.
Yeah.
Everybody was doing silent protagonists, but for a character action game, I don't think it's the best decision. And I do like that they play with it, though, because, you know, obviously the tone is darker, especially initially on. And the very first line you hear, Stuart, you can do it, because you're better.
So I do it again.
Well, hold on. So we got to set the stage. So
okay.
Jack is tortured for 2 years, kind of like Sonic was in the much later game. And Daxter basically spends 2 years rescuing him. And when he finally makes his way to Jack, right before Jack's essentially going to be killed, at least that's what it's insinuated.
Yeah.
He's like begging him to wake up and says, you know, say something for once in your life. And Jack sits up and.
Hi, Daxter. How are you? It's good to see you. It's been a while. No, he says, I'm going to kill Praxis. Praxis is Baron Praxis, by the way. We should probably explain that.
It's not a Klingon moon.
No, it's not a Klingon moon. It's not Praxis. He is the sort of a sensible villain of the game, although he's not the final villain of the game, but that's a spoiler.
So food for thought, by the way. So if that is Jack's first sentence he utters, would Jack be a good compatriot to the guys from Stranger of Paradise? I'm going to kill chaos.
I would like that a lot if you could play as Jack in almost, you know what, I'd like to play as Jack in any game these days at all. Like, just put Jack in a goddamn game, please.
I saw you can play Jack in a Crash game. There is a mod somewhere, I heard.
So, are you talking Jack as in J-A-K or Jack as in J-A-C-K? Because they're, you know, they could do Jack and Jack. Ooh. They would be awesome together, like a buddy cop game or something, you know?
You are onto something here.
Jack and Jack. Yeah, they're both ignoring each other, turning up their new metal, like, louder and louder.
We are going to kill Praxis and Chaos.
Yeah.
So, the thing about this period was, and I think what caused the reaction to this game and many others was it seemed like a lot of games were taking this dark turn. Obviously, there's Prince of Persia, The Warrior Within, which, also again, great. Unfairly maligned, very good game, and I would argue, gameplay-wise, it's better than the first.
I know we're not talking about Warrior Within, but I played that quite recently, and I was just thinking, like, you know, this honestly kind of makes me think about Bloodborne. Like, I know it doesn't play like it, but it has the same kind of focus on combat that I thought was good.
It's
but to be honest, they both smolder with generic rage. It's
but not just that, also Burnout, if you remember, when they did Burnout Revenge. It was a bit later, but the joke there was that Burnout was now smoldering with rage because it went for the darker tones. And that was
traffic
just
checking.
The common thing to do. I would almost say Jack feels like a transition from N64 to Xbox in terms of style.
Yep.
And of course, the sort of the air quotes darkness does feed into the dark Jack mode that you can take on in this game, which is a kind of, you transform into like the creature from a Disturbed album cover, and then you can, now here's the thing about dark Jack in Jack 2 is it's really shit. Like, it's not useful at all. The only thing it's good for is cleaning the screen with the dark bomb. And I think it's quite funny that you get two Jack powers and they're both essentially the same thing until you get Dark Giant, which is actually similarly useless.
It's only not very really works. It works okay in like city style environments, but as soon as you're in any of the platforming areas, you just like fall right off.
Dark Jack is good for one specific point of the game, which is escape the slums with the seal piece, because you can do the dark bomb into the water, destroy the sentry, and then just swim out casually without having to engage with any of the enemies. And that's one of the hardest missions in the game. So, yeah. I mean, speaking of difficulty, because we have talked about difficulty.
Yeah, but I'd like to add one more thing about Jack, which is, I think, a nice bit of characterization is, if you played again recently, I mean, Jack is more angry, but usually only when interacting with the city and the people, but not with Dexter. Then he's more...
Yeah,
jovial.
There's more of the old Jack, which is, I think, that's a nice touch. So
yeah, agreed.
They know what they are doing.
Yeah, that's why I think that the character is, that the dismissal of this game is edgelordy, which is nonsense. Ridiculous nonsense. There are higher stakes. There is, the characters do die, but it's not like it's a gore fest. It's not like it's really a cuss fest, you know. It's just Daxter being as stupid as ever, getting into physical comedy, you know, getting sucked into pipes and smacked around. It's ridiculous.
I think the same misconception applies to the game design as well, where essentially the city itself acts as a giant hub world, right? So it does have vehicles you can drive, and they're these hover vehicles, and they have two heights. So you can go at the height of flying above the city or down on the streets where you can run people over and get in trouble.
Yeah.
But outside of that, all of the missions, well, most of the missions sort of take place outside in bespoke areas.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, but I've always felt that the first big mission you do, where you have to go take that banner down from the tower, is actually a recreation of Mario 64's first mission, where you kind of go out into this area, you're running around on the ground, and then you have to make your way up a spiraling tower while essentially contending with platforming challenges. And then you reach the top and you get it. And then the twist, though, is that when you pick up the flag, the whole tower like crumbles beneath you.
It was a supporting flag.
Exactly. So I feel like that small mission, as simple as it is a perfect setup for what the game is all about. And it is much more defined platforming segments. Yeah. It's less open than the first game in these mission areas. And you actually get some really challenging, interesting platform challenges that are just a lot of fun to play.
I think that first mission is actually, that first area specifically, not so much the mission, but the area that you go in. It's a tutorial that comes up multiple times in a weird way, because when you first go in there, it's very clear there are areas you can't get to yet. That
right.
You need the jetboard to get across the Dark Eco. If you head out into that Dark Eco, it just looks like that's the walls. That's essentially where you can't go. But you can go there. You can go around the back, and you can find about 6 precursor orbs in a sort of secret area. And it's very rewarding, because they're very rare in this game. They're very hard to find in this game. But then also, you come back later, and you're now able to use the Titan suit to like break down the walls and go to other areas you weren't able to go to yet. You go there several times, and every time you go there, you're using something some new different tool, and it feels completely different. It's a very cool game. And of course, once you get that jetboard and you learn that you can go to these new areas, you start thinking, oh, hang on, there was some water or some Dark Eco in this level as well, where maybe if I go there, I'll find some more of these orbs, and you totally do. Very, very clever, well-designed game. And something I want to flag up, because I'll forget if I don't. My friend Andy Hamilton, he wrote in his newsletter recently that he was playing Mafia 1. And I swear this is going somewhere. The remake of Mafia. And the thing about Mafia is the city is quite empty of what you consider the modern sort of open world distractions.
Yeah.
And I find that's true of Haven City and Jack 2 as well. There are some missions you can do, but they don't really unlock that frequently. They're quite few and far between. So all that you do in the city when you are in the city is travel. And a lot of people I've read online say that's a negative thing because it means it's just boring going from place to place. But that's your time to learn the city. That's your time to learn how to drive the friggin' cars, you know?
Later on, there are missions in the city, right?
Yeah, there are. And it really helps to know where you're going as well. So once you get to that, it starts to really, I find it's really immersive because you start to realize that you know where you're going. You know what you're doing. You know where everything is. You know how traffic's going to be in certain districts.
So, Stu, that's an important point. And this is something that I feel has made open world games worse, is there's a certain point where developers started indicating to players exactly where to go. They would have a mini map with a line or indicators somewhere on the screen. So you never actually have to learn environments anymore. You're just following a line.
Yeah. But
back then, even GTA was like this. You might have a mini map with like an icon to give you a general idea of where you need to go, but it never tells you explicitly how to get there. And so that involves actually learning the layout of the city and getting to know it. And your eyes are more on the world instead of just on a map.
Yeah.
And I think that makes a huge difference.
I think it also helps that the levels are so populated that you really do have to keep an eye on the traffic. You can't just tune out and drive there.
You cannot.
You're always engaged. Of course, there's the fact that if you accidentally like cough near a Crimson Guard, they all come after you.
Yeah, that's the so if you drive on the upper tier, you keep crashing into hovercraft, but if you go low, which is actually easier for driving, you run the risk of running into the Crimson Guard, and then they all go crazy and start chasing you.
So that's what I find engaging, is that when you're driving, you're almost constantly switching layers without even thinking about it, because you're seeing like, oh, guard, better go up, oh, you know, bike, go down. And then there are certain areas in the slums that you can just fly over, and it's all just very I just find it all very engaging. And by the end of Jack 2, I just thought, like, yeah, this city's awesome. Like, I know there's not much to do in it, but it's just fun just to going places, because I'm not fast traveling anywhere. I'm learning all the different districts and stuff. I just dug it.
I think it also bears worth noting the technical prowess that Naughty Dog shows in this game. I mean, the original game was very impressive, no doubt, but Jack 2, the level of detail, the texture detail, the model detail, especially in the cutscenes, it has increased so much. And on top of all that, there's still, it's not perfect, but they're still targeting 60 frames per second. They've also added progressive scan support, so that the actual resolution is twice as high as it was in Jack 1. And all of it is super seamless. In fact, the seamlessness even translates into the camera, like where you'll go in and out of different areas and the camera kind of swoops through very cinematically without ever losing track of the player. It's super impressive.
Do you think that is because of the game structure as well, that the many of the levels are now more self-contained?
I mean, perhaps, but the city itself is larger and more complex visually than anything in the first game.
This is the one that's most fresh, because I played through the whole thing quite recently, beginning to end. It took me about, I think, 11 hours, which is not that really that bad.
No.
And I was actually quite, even though I was playing on an emulator, yes, and the visuals were improved somewhat by the emulator, I was quite struck by, because the PS2 for me, it feels like a lifetime ago. And that's probably a horrible concept, but to look back at the PS2, considering what the 3, 4, and 5 are throwing around, Jack 2 running on the PS2 almost feels like a miracle. Like, it's insane.
Oh, it does.
The amount of, the number of NPCs going on, the amount of stuff coming on in the city, the fact that you're able to jump on and off vehicles, shoot, run on foot, jump on a hoverboard, all sorts of things, very versatile, and it pretty much does hit 60 a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Like, compare that to even Vice City.
Well, I mean, exactly. The GTA games look and run very poorly compared to this, I think.
Yeah.
And I think the best comparison, and why the PS2 was so impactful, and that whole generation, is you look at a game like Jack 2, and then you just look back like 3 or 4 years prior at like PS1 and N64 era, and the leap there is so gigantic, and it's beyond any sort of leap we see today with modern game systems moving between generations.
Yeah, I mean, quickly going back to Jack 1 for a second, Jack 1 was for me the game that made a really good case for the PlayStation 2 for me for the first time. Because before that, yeah, these games look nice, but Dreamcast looks often nicer, and Jack is a game, I played it for the first time, and I said to myself, all right, I think my Dreamcast could not do that, probably.
It's an incredibly impressive technical feat, and even now, the fact that it does what it does so smoothly is impressive to me. Like, I don't really know what else to say about Jack. I mean, we've talked about the game being harder, but when I went through it again, now, I don't consider myself to be a very skilled at games. And when I went through Jack 2 again, I was expecting to get destroyed by some of the missions that I remembered being really hard, like the one where you've got to escort the people in the sewers. I remember that being very difficult. And I remember like the escape from the slums mission where you're going across the docks and there are constant Crimson Guards coming. That's a nightmare. Or it was back in the day. But playing it more recently, I died quite a few times, but I never felt like, this is too hard. This isn't fair. Like, there are very few parts where I felt like that. And I don't know if maybe it's a change in expectations nowadays, that what people expect from games difficulty, because it doesn't adapt to you. Like, I don't think that if you die enough, it gets easier. I don't think it has adaptive difficulty.
No, nothing you like.
No, I don't think so.
But I had a great time playing it, and I think the fact that it was quite challenging was a big part of that. Like, I was really engaged. It's not, air quotes, it's not get good. It's just have any challenge to speak of. Because, I mean, I played Ratchet Rift Apart, and as impressive as that game was, I never felt in any way like I was in any danger of dying, almost.
No.
And I turned the difficulty up to the highest, and that's not, again, this is not a flex, because I don't care if people want to play on it easy, that's totally fine. I turned the difficulty on Ratchet up to the highest, and I just felt like, well, now this is maybe slightly less hard than Ratchet 1 was on the PS2.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
the things have changed big time.
They definitely have.
I think one reason why it might be considered difficult is that it throws so many stuff at you,
and if you don't
get along with some of the elements, you have a problem. So when I played the game, there's this mission. You remember that when you had to use that hoverboard thingy with a time limit and throw some sort of grenade into some sort of other thingy, you remember that?
Oh, yes, I remember. Do you mean when you're on the jet board and you've got, like, 2 minutes to bomb out all of the silos? Yeah, that's ridiculous. I did that with, like, 1 second to spare.
Yeah, and the thing is, I talked to John about that yesterday. He said he played his Tony Hawk back in the day. He did his homework. I did not. I was not a Tony Hawk player. So I was stumped for a couple of days. And are you kidding me? I want to play Jack, and I don't know if I want to play Tony Hawk, I would buy fucking Tony Hawk.
That makes me laugh in a way, because there are what, two hoverboard missions and that jetboard missions in that game, and the first one is the trick mission, which you can do by just spamming the L1 button. And then the second one is that. Which is this 2 minute mission where you genuinely have 10 seconds of leeway, maybe at most.
It's not easy, I would agree, but again, as somebody that was playing a lot of, like, boarding games, including even weird stuff like Airblade.
Oh man, Airblade is cool.
You know, like, for me, it's like, oh yeah, this is great. Like, but I guess they were also kind of beyond tapping into GTA. They're like, man, a Tony Hawk, it's pretty popular. We should do that too.
The thing that fascinates me about the jet board is that to speed up, you've got to do a full rotation trick.
Yeah.
Like, even Tony Hawk wasn't that tech. Like, you had to press X to speed up.
It doesn't play that well, I would say, in comparison, but it's a fun mechanic.
It feels good. But this is one of the things I love about this game is, if you're playing a certain mission, like the Slums Escape, I keep mentioning it because it's the most notorious mission in the game. And the way I eventually did that, because I kept dying, because it's a pretty difficult mission. You have to be really good with the guns, or you have to use some kind of trick. And what I ended up doing is I just jumped on the jet board and I just sailed past everything because I kept my speed up and I'd hop across corners and stuff. And it was challenging as hell, but it was a valid way of doing it. So, it was great.
No, you're totally right, but we haven't actually mentioned the guns in detail yet.
No, we haven't mentioned the guns. That's weird. That's we should have mentioned the guns.
That's a very important mechanic.
I'd like to throw out two quick things before we get to the guns, if that's okay. Yeah. In a way, I think that Jack 2 is a very polished game that reminds me a bit of another game. I know John loved it a lot. It's a Monster Boy on the Cursed Kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
It's also a game that was very, very polished to a degree, I think, where some of the puzzles were so polished that you also had to play pretty exact at some point and really do what the developers polished it for. And I think Jack is in a way similar, which is not a criticism, it's just a sign that they put so much fine-tuning in it.
It's an interesting point of comparison, because that's another game where I played it, didn't like it, came back to it later and thought, nah, this is great.
Exactly.
Like, it vibed. I could not get into the vibe of it, and then I came back and I was just like, yeah, actually, no, this is good.
It's real good. Actually, again, before we get to the guns, one of the big distinctions I want to make clear as well, if it's not already obvious, is that, you know, a lot of modern open world games, everything that you do in the game takes place within, like, this fixed open world environment. But what makes Jack 2 work so well is that most of the missions are specifically crafted. So you go to a separate area, and that area is planned out and designed to be, you know, specifically fun to play through, rather than just like, well, we put a mission inside of an area that you're already exploring. It's like, no, this is a crafted level.
At the end of Act 1, when you're traveling to the Baron's Tower across that huge structure above Haven City.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, that's one of the coolest missions, like, ever in any platformer. Like, it rules. It's just incredible. Everyone who's done that remembers that mission. It's, like, the one mission that stands out the most, I think. And it's not even that long. It's just a really well-designed, really cool level.
And that leads to a point I also wanted to make. I think it's a pro and a con at the same time. I loved about the first game that it was had this freewheeling, explore stuff, find cool stuff structure, which is completely gone from the second one, in favor of this more, again, Mario 64-style mission structure. You do one story mission after another, and it's all planned out for you, which works great in the game. But I did miss this kind of exploration factor and, oh, I just hit over, I knocked over this egg, and now I got power cell. Awesome.
Yeah.
Different focus.
It's probably worth mentioning, and I know we will get to the guns. This is going to be a long episode. It's going to be good. the collecting is much less important in this game. There is still collecting, but it's quite incidental. The precursor orbs are not everywhere anymore. They are really well hidden. Like, you have to really dig to find them. And also,
they have a very different function now.
Annoyingly, a couple of them are missable. There's one missable one in the sewers, and there's a bunch of missable ones on the final level because you can't go back there. Which is quite frustrating. Although, thankfully, there is a glitch that lets you copy them if you really would need to. But, I mean, I never got all the all of the precursor orbs in this game because the stuff it requires of you to do that, like, yeah, to do the, you have to do the races with the developer times and stuff, but that's not happening. Like, I'm not doing that. We haven't mentioned the races, but it's more important that we talk about the guns, I think, because they are a major factor in this game. I've always liked the gunplay in this game. It gets a lot of criticism for not being like Ratchet and Clank, but it's different to Ratchet and Clank. It's not supposed to be like Ratchet and Clank.
I agree.
It feels nice.
And Ratchet and Clank's an awesome game. Listen to the Retronauts episode about it sometime. But with Jack, they do feel a bit more... I don't like using the word slapdash, but they are more loose. Like, the gunplay is a lot more... automated, like the aiming is automatic, and you only have to basically be pointing in vaguely the right direction.
The aiming is, it's less about aiming, it's more like just a platforming mechanic. Like, this is not a shooter. That's the difference. You don't play it like a shooter. None of the mechanics are like that. It's more just like, well, here's one more tool for your arsenal while platforming, and it's fun to use. I mean, they keep it simple. I think there's only four guns in the game, if I recall.
But they're interesting in the way that they synergize with your, because you have all of your moves from the first game as well.
Punching,
the spinning. But the way that the guns synergize with that, like the infamous yellow gun spin fire, and you just shoot in all directions, like with ridiculous accuracy. If you hit an enemy with a punch and then use the shotgun, the whole wind-up disappears. It's like an instant follow-up. There's a lot of synergy like that, and it feels
that
very,
felt
very
so
cool.
Good. I love that shotgun feeling in Jack 2. That was just
that's
fantastic.
Really good.
I think if you punch and then use the yellow gun, you shoot three shots in quick succession directly at the enemy as well, which is very satisfying.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of cool stuff like that. It's not till Jack 3 that they start building on the gunplay, but I feel like what they have here works. I almost feel like you don't need more than that because they're very situational. I think a lot of people who find the game nails hard don't use the guns properly.
That's right. It is a core part of the mechanics, and part of that's because some of the challenges integrate guns on the enemy side as well. Mm. Like, there's even things where you're like dodging turrets, and it's like raining gunfire, almost like a Danmaku shooter or something. And you're jumping over the bullets and trying to get through there, dealing with enemies. Like, it's not just Jack that has the stuff at his disposal.
It's a little bit of leeway that you get because when you've played it, if you've played it recently, you may have noticed this anyway, but the Crimson Guard, when they fire at you, their first two shots will always miss. You have that much leeway, and then the third one will hit you. So you have quite a lot of time to handle these guys if they're far away from you. And the later stages do kind of make use of that, because you'll get like 60 Crimson Guards like on a platform in front of you, and you've just got to... I mean, there's one quite infamous mission where they're just constantly pouring out of a doorway until you get to it. So you've got to know that you've got that leeway. Otherwise, you're going to panic. You're going to have...
Which, by the way, that's really impressive. Can we just say that, like, the number of entities on screen at any point this game is absurd. Yeah.
It's crazy. It's interesting to me that we'll talk about this at the end, I think, but the ports of this game don't run as well as the PS2 one did.
They don't.
In some respects, and we will get to that, I think. I'm not sure what else to say about 2. I guess the only thing I can, because I loved going through this again, and I totally understand why some people would bounce off this game. Like, I don't fault them that. I do fault them when they say it's bad, because they're wrong. But the thing about this game that's not so great, I think, is the side missions, because a lot of them are very unimaginative, just kind of a orb has appeared somewhere in the city, now go and get it. It's not that they're not fun, it's just that there's not much to them. And the side missions that are more fun, like the ring races, are very, very low in number.
The ring races are pretty good.
I love the ring races. You have like 3 seconds. They are totally impossible. It's great. Yeah.
The game does not pull any punches.
It really doesn't.
The thing is, though, is I do feel like the game makes a somewhat less than positive first impression. Like, I think it's good from the start, but you don't really get a full feel for what it brings to the table right off the bat. And if you're already not sold on the change in tone, I could see people being like, this is not what I wanted in Jack, and then not giving it a proper shot. But you really should if you've not played it, because there's a great game here.
I think it's, again, a bit of this typical more modern internet backlash at this point.
I have to agree, to be honest. I have to agree with that. But I think that also there's a general... oh, God, I know how I sound when I talk about stuff like this, and I really hate sounding like it. with a video game, once it's been decided that your game sucks, that's it. Like, yep. that's unlikely to turn around. The pattern tends to be game comes out, game gets dumped on pre-release, post-release, Balan Wonderworld. And that game's crap forever. No matter what it has, that game is now forever a joke game, essentially. And it's only relatively recently that I'm seeing some more kind of... this isn't so bad. This is all right. This has something
I've been
offer.
There since day one, man.
Yeah.
Since you mentioned that, by the way, I think this podcast is rather unique for having three people who like Balan Wonderworld.
Oh, wow. Uh-oh. Yeah. This is a special day.
Okay, guys, we are making a singularity here. That's dangerous, you know that?
Yeah. Oh, a portal's just opened up to the Wonderworld. I'm off, see ya. Bye, everyone. But no, Jack 2, I think underappreciated considering how good it is at what it does. If you don't like what it does, that's fair enough. I can see how the early mission where you're picking up product for crew could put people off because it is a genuinely difficult driving mission in a game that until that point has mostly still been platforming.
Right, yeah.
So that could bounce. I mean, I think that bounced me off at the time. But coming back to it, no. I mean, the vehicle handling is very loose, but I actually really like it. When I figured out that shifting from upper to lower level actually tightens your turning circle, it's a lot of fun to kind of almost drift around corners while going up and down. It's silly, but it is fun. I think the roughest part of the city is in the bazaar, the market.
Yeah.
There's a bit where you drive up onto a little bypass, I guess you could call it, and you can't go up and down on that bypass, so you're just a slave to where the traffic is. And there's at least two side missions where you have to use that bypass, and if the traffic's heavy, that's it, you're done. Like, you are not finishing that mission, and that's really frustrating. So I guess I can give them I can bump the game for that one, I can knock them for that, but otherwise I think it's a bit of a masterpiece. I think it's really, really bloody good.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And man,
I'd like to ask, sorry,
yeah, go ahead.
I only want to ask about the game's tone in general, because, you know, you have many people talk like this in the game. Irony, or are they serious? What do you think?
I think it's serious, but I don't think it matters that much. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the character of Torn, for example, whose entire thing is just being like, yes, it lost some good guys down there. You're probably going to die too.
It's funny.
While Daxter bounces off him, you know, and makes fun of him, because that's what Daxter is there for, to make light of everything.
Yeah.
Like, Crew is a kind of a gross character, and all Daxter does is make fat jokes about him the whole game. And it's a guilty laugh, you know?
Yeah, just ask me your opinion about that.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I've always liked it. I've never took it too seriously. I don't think the developers took it too seriously either.
Yeah.
And the more serious aspects of the story, I think they balance it better in Jack 3. Because I think Jack 3 has a legit good story.
Definitely.
I will criticize again in Jack 2 the characters. It's a little bit jarring in 2022 the way that Kira and Ashlyn get treated, if only because they would do better now. In terms of just like the con, and Tess as well. That they are just like, all Daxter does whenever they're on the screen is like lech at them.
Yep.
And it's a little bit already. It's like, I mean, that's Daxter, that's his character, but it is a little bit kind of like, this is getting kind of lame. And they don't really follow up in Jack 3 either. They get even more, they get kind of massively sidelined. But I guess I'd prefer sidelining to more Daxter hitting on people, I suppose.
Yeah.
But then I guess, if those are the only two things that I can really point at that I don't like, which is some of the side missions aren't great and the treatment of the woman characters is kind of its time, you know, that's not a huge, like, that's what games unfortunately were like back then more than they are now. And they're still not great, obviously, but they're better than that in terms of any kind of representation. So, good game.
Yeah, overall, very good game, I'd say.
it took me a long time to play Jak 3 because it was when I got back to Jak 2, but I ended up doing Jak 2 and 3 basically consecutively because I was so into the second one.
All right.
And that was Jak 3 2004. The major change here is that it's now set in the Wastelands, which is an area that is mentioned in Jak 2. Outside of Haven City, so it's with this inhospitable, sort of Borderlands-ish kind of location with roaming like vehicle gangs and stuff.
It's Mad Max.
It's Mad Max. Yeah. And I thought Jak 3 was another step towards kind of variety. There is still platforming, but there's a lot more driving in this game.
The driving's so great, by the way.
It is.
I want to say, if you can ride Lizard in the game, I'm down for that.
Yeah, you can Lizard ride Lizard. Riding. It's one of the first things you
always
do.
Good.
Yeah, I loved riding the Lizard around Spargus, the new sort of hub town, because they've hidden precursor orbs in places that require you to do quite difficult platforming. And that's my bread and butter. So I was just like, hell yeah, I'm bouncing this Lizard off of these overhanging like walkways, and it was fun. The game's a little less stingy with giving you the gun mods. You get gun mods quite quickly in this game, if memory serves.
Yeah.
You definitely get the scattergun mod very, very early on. You get your own car quite early on, which you can then customize, add guns to and stuff.
Yeah, I love the mounted gun on top running
around
with that.
Yeah, it's, and, you know, taking down in the early game, you have to fight wasteland metalheads, which are massive dinosaur sized metalheads that you bring down with the gun. It's very satisfying.
So I would say then the big design change really is the buggy, right?
Yeah.
That this is built on Jak 2. It's the same basic design principles, but the Wasteland has like sort of that rolling terrain, deserty environments, and you drive around in your buggy, and
yeah,
that plays very differently than the hover cars from Jak 2.
Yes, it does. It's much bouncier and more fun.
Exactly, exactly.
you can flip that buggy and then just keep going. It's great. I found that I accidentally flipped the buggy a lot.
I've always kind of wondered if between the antenna that bounces around and the way it handles that on the terrain, if they were like fans of Halo, you know,
that's
they enjoyed,
point.
You know what I mean?
I think back then everybody was right.
Exactly. But it kind of reminds me of the Warthog a little bit, you know?
No, I hadn't actually considered that, but yeah, it does feel like that. The very hilly kind of wasteland as well.
Exactly. That's
a good point. And the gun, the mounted gun, obviously. That's a very good point. I mean, I have less to say about Jak 3 than the others, apart from really story-wise. It's very cool that you return to Haven City, although they have actually kind of polished Haven City up a bit and removed the market district entirely.
I mean, that is stuff I just love in games. If you play a sequel and you get back to a setting from the previous game, you recognize, and that is somehow changed and touched up.
Yeah, Dead Space 2, baby. Dead Space 2. Back to the Ishimura. One of the best parts of any game ever. Awesome.
Well, it does. There is that part later in the game, I remember, where you're like flying around in some sort of like hover vehicle, like blasting at a huge fortress. Do you guys remember that?
I remember that. Yeah.
That always reminded me again, kind of, it's like, oh, this is like a Rogue Squadron set piece. Because it's this huge moving base thing and you're blasting it at hot points on there. And, you know, that's cool. And there's a lot of variety like that in Jak 3 that I think just kind of expands upon what they were doing in the second game. And it all works for me, I think, pretty well.
I think it's a more balanced, more polished take on Jak 2, more refined.
Yeah.
The way that you've got so much more options with your guns, you've got more options to take on each mission. The way that the collectibles work is more fun. You get more orbs quicker, and that means you get more secrets quicker. The metalhead tokens have been turned into an almost incidental thing, which you then use to buy side missions to get more orbs, which focuses the collecting a lot more. It's just a tremendous amount of fun. And I think that they've refined Dark Jak, so it's actually useful now. You can turn it on and off instead of just having to be forced into using it.
Right.
Light Jak is a thing now where you can fly, which makes you feel very liberated, I think. Going back to Spargus with Light Jak and flying over all the building rooftops and finding a whole new vibe to the place. Very cool. Very cool.
The music's better.
Yeah, absolutely. The visuals are superb as well, like beautiful.
Yeah.
I think this came out around the same time as Ratchet Up Your Arsenal, so the peaks of both series more or less at the same time, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. 2004 was a big year for the stuff.
So since there was only 1 year between Jak 2 and 3, do you know about the development, how close they were, and how interlapping these development cycles were?
I mean, given that they'd, all I can, and I don't know this for a fact, I want to get hold of the book, The Art of Naughty Dog, but it's now absurdly expensive.
Yeah.
Cause I wish I'd bought it when it was new, but, I don't know. The design Bibles for Jack 1, 2, and 3 are all available online now. And I haven't been meaning, I should have read them before this, but I simply didn't. That's the Retronauts difference. I couldn't be bothered. no, I forgot. I just forgot that I had them. I apologize, listeners. But I don't really know. I mean, all I can think of really is that the development would have been quicker if only because they had the tech already.
Yeah.
I don't know if Jack 2, because Jack 2 presumably is its own bespoke sort of engine.
Yeah, and I'm sure that they were probably working on this before Jack 2 was complete.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
A certain amount of the team is finishing Jack 2 while others are already working on the third game. And since this builds directly on what they did in the second game, you know, I'm sure. And besides, iteration times back then were generally just faster than they are now.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course, so, yeah. I want to talk about the story on this game a little bit because I mentioned it earlier, and this is going to be a huge spoiler.
Oh, yeah.
I think that this game's story is awesome compared to, like, and I like the story in 2, but I think this one is the one that really delivers in terms of, like, it pays off the story of Mar from Jack 2 and who he is and who he was. It pays off in terms of the time travel storyline. It does some very smart things with that, I think. It's, the reveal of the precursors is the most perfect thing I've ever seen. Like, when those precursors emerge and you see that they are, well, they're odd souls.
Right.
And you're like, oh my god, everything now, it's perfect. Like, A, it's a great joke. B, the reaction it gets from Jack is genuinely laugh out loud funny. Just, oh my god. and C, it's emotionally a perfect arc for Dexter. Like, he got turned, well, it turns out he's not been downgraded, air quotes, he's become a precursor. Like, he's one of these kind of god creatures who created the whole world.
And yeah, and I mean...
And he gets pants! He gets a pair of pants! Like, that's his arc, he finally gets pants.
Looking at Dexter's original design when he was still a humanoid, I think this is already a glow-up turning into an otzel.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
But I just think that... It's the kind of thing that they must have thought of and realized. I'm not even sure they realized how perfect it was. Like, maybe for them it was just a gag, but for me I was just like, nah, this is great.
I love how they come in floating on what look like the platforms from the precursor, like, ruins from the first game, even. Like, you immediately recognize, like, that kind of design. You're just like, oh, wow, okay.
And of course, like the villain Vega gets turned into one, which he obviously hates. But then, I think Tess, like Dexter's kind of love interest, gets turned into one as well, and then they hook up, and it's just kind of like, okay, I guess that's what's happening. And then there's the ending where Jack goes off to explore like the universe, but then he just turns up, and you don't know whether it's time travel or if he just didn't go. Like, it's genuinely quite ambiguously done. He's just there at the end, despite having just been seen disappearing into another dimension. It's a really cool ending. I really like it. And of course, it's not the ending. There was a follow-up game. But I loved Jack 3. I thought it was brilliant. It's almost, if you're not vibing with Jack 2, it's almost worth skipping to 3 and see if you like that one more, because it's definitely not as difficult.
It took me a while to play 3 because I was just jacked out after Jack 2. As I mentioned, I had to play that thing for that walkthrough, and it was rather painful.
Oof.
So I made my peace with them.
We'll be right back.
I essentially got so into 2 that I went straight onto 3, and then when I finished 3, I went straight into Jack X. And it turned out, hey, this game's got a story too.
Yeah, it does.
Because I assumed it was just going to be some dumbass cart game, more or less, but it is actually very good. Are we talking about Jack X? Are we done with 3, do you think?
Yeah, we should probably move on to Jack X.
And Jack X was 2005, PS2 again. It's called Jack X Combat Racing. It's, you know, Twisted Metal-ish. It doesn't have the open, like, stages of Twisted Metal, but it's a driving game where you can blow up. Well, it's more like Mario Kart, I suppose, with the weapons, but done in a more quasi-realistic sort of way. It had full online play, and it had split screen.
Well, the main difference, so they are Naughty Dog. I thought they were establishing a pattern here because they did Crash Team Racing. So 3 Crash games, then a kart game based on Crash, then 3 Jack games, then this game. And there's no Uncharted kart, which really makes me sad, or Last of Us kart.
Like, and it should be it should be called Uncharted. It's not
Uncharted. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But so
and the Fast of Us. That's the driving one.
I would suggest the Kart of Us. Maybe that would be
that works too.
All right.
The main difference with Jack X, though, that I find is that it does actually have typical racing, but it also has those more open areas where you can have, like, racing around sort of an arena, completing whatever goals. Yeah, that's sort
of almost kind of battle mode-ish kind of stuff.
Yeah, so like Mario Kart. It's weird. Like, it's good, but it's has its own vibe. It kind of actually feels like they just took a lot of the ideas with vehicles from Jack 2 and 3 and spun it off into its own thing.
The fact that it has a
full... Which is what probably happened.
Yeah. The fact that it has a full story mode with full acting, full everything that is actually got stakes and directly follows on from, like, Jack 2 and 3, and, you know, specifically crew being dead. Right. And it's based around the fact that at his, like, wake or his funeral or whatever, at the will reading, he poisons everyone, including his own daughter. And the idea is that you have to race in order to get this antidote. It's a little bit of a stretch, but the excuse is you get one of the greatest opening cutscenes in gaming history, where Daxter is in a bar getting consistently attempted to be murdered while Jack smashes through as Queens of the Stone Age's "You Think I Ain't Worth a Dollar But I Feel Like I'm," something like that plays, and it's literally the coolest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. In fact, the music in this game has loads of uncredited contributions from, like, Faith No More musicians and, like, Tool. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd. Because they didn't have any licensed music in the previous games, and yet it works perfectly in this world, I think.
Yeah, it's very silly. Tongue-in-cheek, but also, like, you can tell they're having a good time trying to make this stuff.
I mean, the fact that it's Jack did take it a long way for me, because I didn't really do racing games back then, apart from Burnout 3, which, you know, changed everything. But Jack X, I played from beginning to end. I had a great time. I didn't get gold on every race or anything, but I saw the story through, and I thought it was a lot of fun. I was really excited when they re-released it on PS4, because they didn't re-release it on PS3.
Oh, no, that's right.
And it was nice to play it again. I mean, it's got things from Burnout. Like, it's got the boost mode from Burnout for, like, dangerous driving, for collecting boost power-ups. Yep. It's got tracks from, like, the second and third game. You've got characters, like, you can unlock Ratchet by having a Ratchet save on your memory card. Also, Ratchet deadlocked.
This game is huge, by the way.
Yes, it is. Like, it's really long.
It's like, oh, it's a kart racer, but no, this is like a full-on, like, story-driven,
oh yeah,
like 7, 8, 9 hour kind of game.
Yeah, and it could, because it's late PS2, it also links up with the PSP as well, which is nice.
Oh, that's right.
A very underused feature. And I want to credit, real quick, because this is the chance we're going to have to do it. The PS4 port, I remember thinking, oh, that sucks, you're not going to be able to play as Daxter or Ratchet. But no, they actually edited it and made it so that you could, by having saves from, like, Ratchet Remake and Uncharted and stuff, to unlock the characters. They made it actually possible, which is more than Nintendo did with the GBA games on the Wii U, so I'm crediting them for that, okay? They got Rayman 3 on the Wii U with 20 levels you can never play ever. It bums me out.
Oh.
The Zelda Game & Watch, you can never play it on the Wii U version. You can never, ever play it.
Yeah, that's...
You can't unlock it. It's stupid.
That's a surprising thing that they did there. I didn't realize that they added that in. That's so cool.
It was really cool. I remember being really happy when they started unlocking. I was like, oh, wow, there's above and beyond effort there. Now, the one thing he didn't do is put online play in, but you could use SharePlay, at least. Still, sucks that they didn't put it in, I guess.
Something else I want to note that this game has that all the prior games have that we don't see often anymore is that 3D like menu kind of system where the menu itself is like built out of a contraption that sort of moves in and out and around the scene with text on it. And like they went nuts in this game, especially like when you get to the vehicle select screen and each little like meter swings out in 3D and the vehicle's all there and its little podium spinning around. And it's cool. It's really wild. And you just don't really see it anymore.
Lots of vehicle customization. You can buy new tires, new like body, new chassis, that kind of thing, and really like deck out your vehicle. And also because of the way that the story mode works, you will need to switch your vehicles up to do certain different game types. So there is a lot to get your teeth into if you get into this game, which I did. I really liked it.
Yeah.
And I rate it, and I think it's underrated. And I'm genuinely pissed off that Naughty Dog slagged it off in The Last of Us Left Behind. Like, don't do that. The Jack X is better than The Last of Us. Don't slag off Jack X. Like, you get there's like a trophy even that says, like, can't win them all or something like that. If you interact with the Jack X mission, I'm like, what are you doing?
So I think you're right that this game has a weirdly negative sort of viewpoint in the general audience where I think it came out so late in the system's life and it was kind of kart racing was over outside of Nintendo's realm. People just kind of looked at it as like, really, they're doing that again, and ignored it.
Yeah.
I'll admit, you can't
blame them to some extent.
I didn't play this until years after its release either, because I also kind of took that initial attitude. I was like, I don't really want that right now. But in the end, I was really impressed and surprised at how fun it is.
Yeah. I think it's a lovely little game, and I'm actually... You know, now that I'm thinking about it, I am still salty about The Last of Us jibe. That's not fair. I mean, Uncharted 3, for God's sake, is worse than this game. Come on.
I think it was just a case of that the time for Jack and Dexter was over at that point.
Well, it shouldn't have been. It shouldn't have been. Should bring it back. Anyway, that's all of the... it's not all the console games. There is one more, but yeah. I think that brings us into the spin-off era of Jack and Daxter to some extent.
He was relegated to portable systems going forward.
Yeah, mostly. And in 2006, Ready at Dawn, who are most well-known, I think, for the God of War PSP games, Chains of Olympus, Ghost of Sparta, excellent games, by the way. Mm-hmm. Especially Ghost of Sparta is one of the best God of War games, in my opinion.
It's really good.
And Daxter, released in 2006, is a prequel that takes place before Daxter rescues Jack in Jack 2, which is like this two-year period. And apparently he spent that time working as an exterminator for some weird little gnome fella, destroying metalhead bugs, and he's got like a sort of electric fly swat and a kind of bug spray that he can use for propulsion, like in Cave Story, like with the machine gun.
That's always awesome.
It's very cool. Yeah. And I thought that this... I mean, there's not a huge amount to say about it because it's quite a simple game, but I had a lot of fun with this game. I thought it was a rather good PSP platformer. And it was nice to go back to the roots in that respect as well, you know?
I would say it's kind of a technical powerhouse, too.
Yeah.
Like a game this impressive looking and large scale running on a portable system in 2006 was kind of unheard of still, right? Like, this was...
There's still no... Is there loading in this game? Or was it a big smooth?
I think it's pretty, if I recall, it's pretty open, just like the console games. Like, I don't think the scale is as large as those, but it has some pretty big areas.
You go out into Haven City, but it's more designed as a platforming hub because there are collectibles there now. And you have a hover scooter, I think.
That's right.
That's the only sort of vehicle you can use. It's a very impressive game for PSP. And the PSP in general is quite...
underrated.
Insane still.
I would say.
It was an incredible machine, ultimately.
Absolutely.
With games like this, and the one we're going to talk about afterwards even, is a very impressive portable game, but it doesn't seem to get the love that it really deserves.
It's pretty much forgotten, I think. That's a problem.
That's a real shame, because I'm just amazed that Ready at Dawn managed to essentially sort of mimic the look and feel of, like, it feels like a fusion between Jack 1 and Jack 2, if you know what I mean, visually. Mm-hmm. but it has the same like quality of animation work and like responsiveness. And I think the only real sacrifice they made for PSP is they dropped it down to 30 frames per second instead of 60. But I think that's a fair compromise for a portable game.
I think it's entirely acceptable. I think it's a very respectable game. I mean, I remember it being on the release schedule for the PS2 for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And it never happened, and that kind of bums me out, because I'd like to have played this on the telly. And I suppose you can with certain peripherals. I don't know.
Yeah, you can definitely do that.
PSTV would be able to do that, I suppose.
And PSPs, starting with the PSP 2000, had component video out, right? And the PSP Go even has a dock, so it works just like the Switch, basically.
Yeah, so if I had a PS Vita TV thingy and I hacked it, I'd be able to play this on the telly, though.
Correct.
Wouldn't I? Man, I'm going to have to get me one of those. I think the price is going up.
Yeah, they sure certainly are.
Yeah,
but not as bad as the dock for the Go. That is insane.
I'm going to have to get a PSTV before they become too expensive so I can play Dexter. I do like this game. For me, it can't match up to 2 and 3 because, of course, it can't. And it doesn't quite have the right tone for me with some of the stuff like Combat Bug, which is this really pointless extra rock, paper, scissors sort of multiplayer thing that you could get in there. Because what it means ultimately is when you find collectibles, they're just nothing. Because no one's going to play Combat Bug with you. So it's a little bit, almost feels like exploring isn't really that rewarding because you're not getting them. You get these dream sequence, which you alluded to earlier, John, which I feel like are totally out of place in Jak and Daxter. I'm not saying they're bad, but this is Conker shit. This is not Jak and Daxter. It's a parody like Braveheart.
The Matrix.
And I mean, how long? And in 2006, when did The Matrix come out? 1999? Was the sequel out? Was Matrix related out?
Yeah, they were all out. They came out earlier. It's just like, it's so weird. Like, they tried to mimic the multi-Smith fight, but it's like a QTE style game where they kind of run at you from all the sides and you have to press the button.
Yeah, the bloody brawl.
Daxter's wearing, he's got the trench coat on, the sunglasses, and he's just, it's raining. It's got reflective floors. It's just, it's a weird thing.
It's like, what the humor of Jak and Daxter is, isn't this kind of Family Guy ass, like, look, here's a thing that you remember. And I like Family Guy. That's just what it is, you know?
Right.
But
I mean,
I get, for me, it feels almost like, it's
that's the
great
difference between this is not a Naughty Dog game, right? Like, Ready at Dawn obviously wanted to do, they did a good job, but they wanted to do their own thing. And I guess this is something that they wanted to add in there.
And unfortunately, they're not really a thing anymore, Ready at Dawn, are they? They seem to be, they're doing Facebook games, so they're not really in the console space anymore, I don't think.
It's a real shame.
They did The Order 1886, which got a huge backlash for some reason.
I like that game. Oh, you know what?
I thought it was fine.
Yeah, it's not amazing, but it was beautiful, and it's a fun little like cinematic
kind of experience. Like a five-hour TPS, and it was fun. I thought it was good.
So they've actually done some good stuff since then, specifically.
Oh, really?
They did Lone Echo and Lone Echo 2 for the Oculus Rift.
Oh, that's why it's... Sorry, when I looked this up and I saw they'd done Facebook and I didn't think Meta, I didn't think Oculus.
So they're still doing good stuff.
Good.
Lone Echo in particular was really creative because you used your hand... You're in space, right? In zero G. And your hand, the hand controllers, you grab onto the environment and fling yourself around through space using the momentum
of zero G. That sounds really cool.
It's really fun.
I'm going to have to pick that up from the Oculus at some point.
Definitely. So,
Yeah, so Daxter, not a bad spin-off. Have we got any more to say about Daxter?
I think it should be really cheap nowadays, shouldn't it?
Yes, you can still buy it from the PS... Well, not the PSP store, obviously, but you can... I'm pretty sure you can still buy it.
So I say let's talk about some more to drive the prices up now.
Yeah. I mean, PSP doesn't seem to have hit the heights that retro games seem to be hitting these days yet.
I hope not.
I'm selling some PSP games at the moment to make space, and stuff that I would have thought would on any other system would be really expensive, like say Mega Man Powered Up, is still only about 30-35 quid.
Yeah.
Whereas if it was a GBA or DS game, it would be through the roof. Goodness knows why. I think one of these days people are going to realize the PSP is amazing. I mean, it had two distinct leases of life for me, which is one. Three, actually. One, PSP UMD games, awesome. Two, realizing it's got an online store where you can buy friggin' PS1 games. on it.
Yeah.
Yes, right. Mate. Absolutely. And then three, realizing it's so little security that you can drag and drop things on it and then just play emulators because they've got pre-signed programs that don't even require custom firmware. Ridiculous. I mean, even to this day, if someone says to me, what would you recommend for a handheld retro machine? I would probably say a secondhand PSP.
Oh, like, and the wildest thing about PSP for me, as a side tangent, is if you're playing PlayStation 1 games on there and you connect your PSP to a CRT TV, it actually outputs at 240p like an original PlayStation. So it's a very like accurate experience.
That's really cool. That's really, really cool. Yeah, PSP, lovely machine. Maybe there should be a PSP episode of Retronauts if there hasn't been one already.
There has been. It was very good.
Was Ray there?
He stood up for it.
Good for him. I wasn't in that one. I think I was in the Vita one.
That's right, yeah.
I'm not as fond of the Vita as I am the PSP, though.
No,
sorry.
Me neither. I like the Vita, but not the PSP's better.
Well, you know, I tried to play Jak and Daxter on the Vita once, and that wasn't very fun. I got quite far into Jak 2, and I don't know how I did it, because they run at 20 frames per second, at the best of times.
We'll get to those other versions of these games, but there is one more game besides Daxter, isn't there?
There is a 2009 released on PSP and PS2, one of the latest PS2 games with those orange boxes, baby. And it's a game that was, like it's a game Storm. Called Jak and Daxter, The Lost Frontier. And Daxter's back in the title. And, this was a game that was started at Naughty Dog. And Neil Druckmann is the credited writer for this game, even, which is
wild
to think about. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the best thing he's ever written to this day, probably. then High Impact Games took over, because Naughty Dog realized that Uncharted, what was the first one called again?
Uncharted Drake's Fortune. And
Drake's Fortune.
That was such a huge technical upgrade in terms of what they were doing that I just think they realized they didn't have the manpower to do a PSP game as well.
Yeah. And High Impact Games, I guess, were chosen because they had worked on Ratchet & Clank Size Matters for the PSP.
Which is good.
Which is really good. Really surprisingly good for what it is, yeah.
And Secret Agent Clank as well. It's called Ratchet & Clank 5.
Oh, that's awesome. And also, Ratchet's got massive eyebrows.
Yes, he does.
Like Oasis-style Liam Gallagher eyebrows or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Legendary. Now, Ratchet & Clank Size Matters is another great PSP game, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it is understandably, in terms of scope, it's a little bit down, but it's got everything you'd want from a Ratchet game, leveling up your weapons, proper aiming controls. Very, very fun game. I had a great time playing that.
They also did Secret Agent Clank after that.
Yeah, it wasn't as well liked, but I didn't actually put a lot of time into that one. I thought, a stealth Ratchet game. I think I'm going to go ahead and give that the old body swerve.
And please,
but
guys,
did this.
Don't forget about DreamWorks Superstar Karts with a Z in the end.
I would never. Of course, I would never forget about DreamWorks Superstar Karts.
Thank you.
With classic DreamWorks characters like Shrek and Shrek 2.
Yeah, unfortunately,
Shrek 3, I think.
Things did not go well for High Impact Games, and their legacy
Turbo
kind of
the
ended
snail.
On a negative
Sorry,
note.
Yeah, that's a shame, because I can only imagine that this game can't... Lost Frontier can't have helped with that, because in doing my research for this episode, I decided to go and see what the Jak community thinks about The Lost Frontier, and oh dear... Oh, they do not regard this game. And in a way, I find that a bit sad, because I don't think it's terrible at all. I think it's okay. I think it would be better if it wasn't a Jak game, maybe.
Yeah.
Because it kind of does undermine the end of Jak 3 by having them just being like, yeah, we're just here now, and none of that really mattered.
So it feels less authentic to the originals than Daxter did.
Well, the characters look weird. They look different and almost like they've tried to make them more realistic.
Weird characters, and the game has this very narrow FOV, so like it feels like your view of the world is constricted somehow, and it doesn't.
Yeah,
there's something strange about playing it that never really sat well with me.
It's not right. That's the problem. All the same moves are there, but they don't feel the same. With Daxter, while you don't have the same kind of moves, everything I did, I felt like, that's Jak and Daxter feel.
Exactly.
With this, it's more like you know, little things. Like when you do the punch attack, you're not really sliding into it. It's almost just a straight punch that you then stop. So it doesn't feel very fluid. It doesn't feel very smooth.
And you lost that dynamic feeling from the second one, especially.
Yeah, and the level design is much more standard and linear than it was in the previous games. And again, I truly don't hate this game. I think it's okay. It's fine. I think it's fine. There are some silly things like Dark Daxter, which is just stupid.
Yeah, that's...
Like, flying a plane while Daxter is manning the guns and there's so much, like, recoil that he's flying in the air while holding onto the controls, that's funny. That's Daxter, right? Daxter transforming into, like, Dark Daxter is just, like, that's not in character. Like,
You mentioned the flying through the air thing, and that's kind of the big new thing in this game.
Yes,
they have these flight missions, right?
And they weren't horrible.
They're okay. But the weird thing there is you can launch Daxter out onto an enemy plane, and he dives under the wing, and you have to do like a mini game of kind of like breaking apart the engine.
It's like that. It's like Nightmare at 40,000 Feet or whatever it's called. Like you gremlin out someone else's plane. It's
exactly
great.
Right.
Yeah, it's a really cool idea, I think. I think it's neat, and I wish it had the fidelity to pull off what they clearly wanted to do. And, I mean, you know, when your game changes hands, like, during development, and then you haven't got much time to finish it, that's what's going to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Your idea is going to get scaled back. And the real bummer about The Lost Frontier, despite issues that it has, is that this was the end. This was the last Jak and Daxter game. Like, they turned up in some other stuff, but... This was the last full tilt starring game for them. And, you know, every other Sony mascot got another game after this. They had Thieves in Time, you know, for Sly. And Ratchet's still going. And I think they were still making Ape Escape games at this point. Or at least putting those characters in games.
And it just, the time it came out, it was 2009, right? So the PSP was almost dead at that point, I'd say.
Yeah.
And PS2, you know. This was like 9 years after the launch of PS2.
Yeah, but the PS2 would keep going for a little while after this, wouldn't it? Like they that thing kept on going.
Yeah,
but, I mean, a bit of licensed games, few ports and stuff like that. But the big times. I think Persona 4 was the last big PS2
also,
game, right?
It's also worth keeping in mind, like this game came out almost a month after Uncharted 2 from Naughty Dog itself. So it kind of feels like it was just not the right game. For that era, and I feel like this could have worked better if it had been saved up for the Vita. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
revive it when the Vita was, because I'm sure the Vita was at least in development at this point.
Certainly.
And they should have known, like, okay, maybe we should actually try to bring Jak back for the Vita. Imagine if they had like a launch game or near launch based on Jak and Daxter. How much more of an impact that could have made.
You know, they were prototyping a Jak 4, weren't there? There's concept art out there
of
a more realistic looking, hideous Jak and Daxter designs. And I would have liked to have seen that, but I mean, they had to make heartrending tales about the human condition, didn't they? So,
I mean, to be fair, if that's what they wanted to do, then I can't really, you know.
No, you can't. I can't say, hey, Naughty Dog, make the same game over and over again. That would be pretty... Oh, wait, they are doing that. This is the third time they're making The Last of Us, isn't it? Oh, dear. No, I'm not going to lament The Last of Us. I like to slag The Last of Us off on Twitter because it's funny. And I think The Last of Us is fine. I think it's a pretty good game.
I don't.
That's a shame.
I mean, I like it. I think it's good.
I don't think it's amazing. I would give it like an 8, and I enjoy playing it. You know, I thought it was quite good. I thought the second one was all right as well.
I mean, it's very well made.
I would rather play Jak. I'd rather have a new Jak, but that's just me being a bit of a Luddite, you know? I would like to see him come back in the same sense that Ratchet kept going, doing essentially the same thing.
I think maybe the problem is that just Jak and Daxter is maybe too much of an early 2000
thing in terms
of tone, in terms of design and storytelling.
But, I mean, so was Ratchet at the time, I'd say, and they've managed to at least keep the character feeling somewhat fresh.
Yeah.
But, of course, also you could say that the story of Jak and Daxter is told now.
Yeah, exactly. Agreed.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's absolutely true. They it had an ending, and a good ending to boot. Yeah. A strong
and
ending.
I think that's something I respect. I mean, think about the people who always clamor, yes, I want Fantasy Star 5. No, you don't. Story is over.
I to a point, I agree with that. To a selfish, illogical point, I want more Jak. And, you know, nothing would make me happier if at the end of The Last of Us Remake they somehow announce a new Jack game. They're not going to, but that would be nice. And
maybe,
you know,
they make a prequel, who knows?
To the credit of Naughty Dog and Sony, they have kept the Jack games more accessible than they have the Sly games or the Ratchet games.
True. Because Sly is much more dead than Jack and Dexter.
You can jump on... I don't know, that movie's coming. Sly Raccoon the movie is coming, okay? You can hop into the PS4 today and you can buy all of the Jack games apart from the PSP ones. You can buy Jack 1, 2, 3 and X right now. And you know what? They're not great versions, but they're okay.
Well, what about PlayStation Move Heroes? Would you consider that a Jack game?
Only as much as I consider everybody's golf a Jack game, because Jack is playable in it.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's not. It doesn't count. Yeah. That's not very easy to access these days.
I bought PlayStation Move Heroes the other day because I've got Move controllers from my PSVR.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm yet to play it because I'm kind of almost scared to play it because I think it's going to be a load of old shite. But
John, do you have a copy?
I just want to see Jack again, you know?
The funny thing about that is they kind of like stylize all the characters so they seem to be in the same world together.
Oh, dear.
And you see them all kind of, you know, unified in terms of the visual design. And it's very weird. Like, you've got, what's his name? It was like Murphy in the wheelchair from Sly Cooper.
Bentley, yeah. Murphy's the frog from Rayman.
Oh, yeah. And the enemies in PlayStation Move Heroes look like the annoying thing, the frog, crazy frog.
Oh, thanks for bringing up the annoying thing now, wonderful. Our common friend will be proud of us.
Indeed. But
even Crazy Frog has more games than Jack has. It's not
crazy,
fair.
Crazy Frog has a lot of games.
Crazy Frog Racing and Crazy Frog Racing 2, Crazy Frog Combat Racing.
But a quick question, you guys, still about Lost Frontier, because there is a PSP and there's a PS2 version. Which one should you get if you are interested?
I'd say PSP personally.
PSP for sure, because for PSP it's still a fairly impressive little game and it kind of fits well on there. You can tell it was made for PSP, whereas on PS2 it feels kind of like an afterthought.
And like some of the other PSP ports to PS2, it looks a bit dodgy.
It's it's the same situation with like when they brought MotorStorm Arctic Edge to the PS2. Like the PS2 version of that looks and runs worse than the PSP game.
They brought Size Matters over as well, didn't they?
Right. Yeah. And I think Secret Agent Clank even got a PS2 port.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
So, they were.
Yeah, I just noticed because you mentioned that you can get the PSP game for maybe 10 euros when you pay about 3 times as much for the PS2 game.
Yeah, but you got to watch out for that. What, it's the greatest hits equivalent of PSP games.
Oh, yeah, there's
games,
a lot of them.
With that
there's
awful
greatest hits, and there is
there's orange dots everywhere, and you can barely... Yep. It's I hate that.
Yeah, terrible. It's gross. Yeah, agreed. We should talk maybe about... We should look into wrapping up, but I think we should talk about the Jack and Daxter PS3 HD collection briefly.
Yeah, and the PC version of Jack and Daxter.
Oh, yeah, and that.
Oh, that's your thing, yeah.
Yeah. Now, the PS3 collection was 1, 2, and 3, and they ran, I want to say, 720p at pretty much locked 60. Is that fair to say?
Mostly 60. I don't think Jack 2 and 3 were perfect, though.
And they had stereoscopic 3D as well back when that was a thing.
Yeah, that was there. The thing about this collection I've always felt is that it's good, but it always surprised me that some of the visual effects from PS2 were not properly translated to the system. So you actually see things missing. Like if I recall, all the precursor architecture in Jack 1 has this sort of metallic sheen to it, and that's missing on PS3. And
that's
I don't know why. Like, it's just
there
gone.
There are some glitches as well. Like, there's a infamous punching glitch where every, like, 8 punches you do, you will fly in just completely the wrong direction.
Oh, yeah.
Which can seriously get you killed big time. But it seems to be a bit of a luck of the draw whether or not it affects you too egregiously.
Also, it just doesn't feel as responsive control-wise. Like,
it's a bit laggy, yeah.
Especially if you play the originals on a CRT, it's like instant response. It feels amazing. Whereas on PS3, the games just feel heavier.
Now, They released that compilation on the Vita as well, and we talked about it briefly. That was 2013. Now, I played quite a lot of Jak 2 on that port, and I got quite far into it. I did the slums mission even on it. And I would like, I am not a negative man, but I would like to say that this should not have been released. It is barely playable. Like, it's completely unacceptable as a port. I mean, even if it did run well, you would still have to use the back touch to go up and down levels when you were flying. You would still have to use the back touch to get on the hoverboard, the jetboard. And what really gets me about it is the Sly and Ratchet compilations to the Vita are fine.
Yeah.
I mean, they're 30 at best, but this was garbage compared to those.
They completely botched it. And
yeah,
it's actually the same with the God of War games. They did a God of War collection on.
Oh, that was very bad. Well. Yes, I remember that.
So both of these, for whatever reason, they barely run, and I'm not sure how they're coded. Or I think what happened actually is that the Vita games are ports of the PS3 versions of these games.
Right.
So they're basically ports of a port, which is not necessarily optimal. I think they would have had to have rebuilt these very specifically for Vita. And I believe if they had done that, they probably could have been excellent ports. They just didn't go through it. And instead we got these half-baked attempts that, as you say, they're terrible, not playable.
They are by some distance the worst way to play these games.
Just total garbage.
So when these came out, had Sony already given up on the Vita at that point, or was it just...
depends who you ask, I think.
I wouldn't say entirely. Like, there was still stuff coming out that was good, but this just...
Yeah.
Whoever handled this port, they did a very, very bad job, and it should have been canceled.
I think it was Mass Media or Moss Media or something, the same people who did the PS3 one.
Wow.
I can't remember who made it. Something like... I don't know what it was. Not Media Molecule. That was the Little Big Planet people. But I remember there was a Reddit like Ask Me thingy with a Sony employee that was saying basically as soon as the Vita got cracked, they internally just went, "Oh, screw this."
Yeah, maybe so.
Which was believable because of what happened with the PSP, because that was one of the most pirated systems ever, I believe.
It certainly was.
Yeah. Oh, well, sadly for them. Joyously for me, because I can play Mega Drive games on it. But it is a shame. But as we said, you can now play the PS4 versions, which I believe are emulations of the original PS2 games with upscaling. On a PS4, they weren't very good. On a PS5, they are quite a lot better, but still not perfect by any means.
None of these work that well. Like you can tell, it's kind of this somewhat janky emulation that. It's playable enough, but it's not where it should be, and it doesn't really feel that authentic as a result.
And now the best way to play the original Jak and Daxter would be this decompiled PC port that you've alluded to. I have not tried this yet, because I could not find a place to download it, but I will look into it.
This is simply absurd. So, similar to Mario 64, this has been a full decompilation project, and now has a native PC version. Jak 2 and 3 are coming, by the way, apparently.
Oh, great. Can't wait.
Even out by the time you hear this. So the thing about this PC version is that it actually has a lot of modern features like ultra wide screen support, supports super high resolutions, a lot of visual upgrades as a result. And it's so amazing to see this running at like 4K ultra wide without any issues at all.
That is actually really cool sounding. Yeah.
This is, I would argue, the best way to play Jak and Daxter right now, just because it's the original game with...
I'd say so. The Jak and Daxter on emulators on PC SX2, which is the one I'm going to be talking about. I'm sure there are other PS2 emulators that I'm not familiar with. It's notoriously quite a weird game to emulate because it has quite a lot of difficult, complex graphical things going on.
Yeah.
So it can be quite dodgy and glitchy, and the water looks very poor no matter what you do, essentially.
Yeah.
But this version, I believe, would be fine if it's been rendered full PC.
This looks correct. It is perfectly replicated. I mean, there may be some bugs somewhere that I haven't seen, but it's a very, very good version of the game.
But as for the sequels 2 and 3, I've been playing them on the emulator, and I think they've been fine, like pretty much locked 60 as long as I've got other stuff close so that the CPU is getting full attention.
It's kind of weird. Later games tend to work better on PCSX2 than some of the earlier stuff. Like,
I wonder
like,
if that's because they'd got the hang of the architecture and they were doing it more efficient. Like, I don't really know how it works.
That's very possible.
I could imagine.
Like, yeah. Ridge Racer 5, one of my favorite games in there, it's still, you can't emulate it properly in PCSX2 unless you use the software rendered mode, in which case, like, why even bother? Yeah. It just doesn't work properly. It's completely busted.
I want to throw out right now, if in the past you've used PCSX2 to emulate and been unimpressed, that thing's come leaps and bounds recently. Yeah,
it is good.
Like, we're talking like they've adopted the kind of DuckStation style UI.
Yeah.
And now everything is per, you can have per game settings and it will automatically apply fixes and stuff like that. And it's just an absolute joy to use now. So, get out there, kids, and get emulating, but don't forget to delete those ROMs within 24 hours or it's illegal. And, yeah, that's, I think that's Jak and Daxter. Broadly speaking, that's all of the Jak and Daxter games. I guess the question to ask would be, what are you guys' favorite games in the series?
John, you go first.
That's a tough one. Looking back at them, I kind of feel like probably Jak 3 is my favorite, just because it's the most polished and, you know, but that's the thing though, is they all have their own, the first three are the ones I like the best, and I like each of them for different reasons. But Jak 2 and 3, I think probably play the best overall. Mm-hmm. Jak 1 is a much more N64 era style game, which I also appreciate, but I think the others just have more refined level design and some really interesting scenarios, even with, you know, the occasional flaw here and there.
Okay, so I have to say I'm all all about Jak 1, to be honest, because it's what John said. It's an N64 style game, but on a hardware that can handle this style of game properly.
Yeah, for sure.
This is something I quite like. It feels breezy. It feels fast. It just has this huge joy of exploration, without being bogged down by a weird frame rate and by cramped levels. And it's just this mixture. We have the blue, we have the green grass, we have the blue skies. I like that. That's just a wonderful feel-good game. When I played for the first time, it just felt like I'm on this huge, huge adventure playground and can just go anywhere, search anywhere, and have lots of fun.
Yeah, I still find it quite invigorating to play that game because just how it feels, how smooth it all feels, is very, very enjoyable.
Yeah.
As for me, I find it very difficult to choose between 2 and 3 because while 3 is pretty much definitely more polished and better, 2 is the one that really got its hooks in me. It has, I think, the most memorable set pieces, so I've got to give it to Jak 2, I think.
That's totally fair.
It's the one I've played the most, and so that maybe that's why. And I'm playing through Jak 3 again at the moment, and when I finish it, maybe I'll change my mind, and in which case we'll have to do a follow-up 2.5-hour podcast.
Isn't that nice? Everybody had a different favorite. Perfect.
Yeah, exactly. It's perfect. It's come together very nicely. Now, I'm going to do my usual slightly awkward wrap-up now. I'm not very good at ending these podcasts because I just don't want them to end, you know? but I think, Thomas, where can people on the internet find you and things that you do and such?
So if you're looking for me for whatever reason, you could, of course, check on Twitter where I'm posting my weird opinions and stuff on at Bimbo Fortuna. That's B-I-M-B-O Fortuna. Bimbo, not Brimblo, that's a different thing. And if you speak German and live in Germany, you can buy the issues of M Games, Germany's oldest surviving games magazine, where I also usually fill between 10 and 20 pages each month because I have too much time on my hands.
Wow, that's a good one. And you can find me at DarkOneX on Twitter or over on the Digital Foundry channel / website at youtube.com/digitalfoundry or eurogamer.net/digitalfoundry.
That was very professional. Wonderful.
And you all know me. You can find me here, or you can find me on Twitter at Chupacabra, being a rotter. And if you have enjoyed this podcast and you would like to support Retronauts, you can do so for a mere £4 per month, or $5 if you are an American. And for that money, you're going to get 2 full-length exclusive episodes per month. Full-length and exclusive for £4. Ridiculous. £4, that's so little money. What an absurdly small amount of money. But if that was all you were getting, then, you know, it'd still be the biggest bargain in the world. But no, you're also getting early access to the weekly Monday episodes. You're going to be the first one to hear all of our cool opinions and the first one to get mad at them. And flame us on the internet, if that's what you want to do. You'll also get access to the Retronauts Discord, and possibly best of all, you'll get Diamond Fights This Week in Retro columns, which are also in podcast form as well as written, and they are extremely good.
They are quite good.
Yep. Very, very good indeed. And also,
this morning I listened to one.
Oh, Diamond will thank you for that. And I want to say, while at the time of recording, this may no longer be true when you hear this, but there is one of the tiers where you can set the topic of a Retronauts episode per 6 months subbed is now available. So get in there and you can force us to talk about your favorite terrible game that sucks. We have to do it. We're like legally obligated. So yeah, thanks very much for listening. Thank you very much for joining me.
May I add a final opinion quickly?
Oh yes, absolutely. One final
opinion. So one thing I would say, this episode right now was maybe the best British-German cooperation since the Otifants games on 16-bit days. So that's something.
And stay tuned for the Otifants episode of Retronauts, where we will talk about the Master System version of Otifants.
Excellent.
It's the only one that I played.
It's the only good one.
It's also the best one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd like to leave you all with a final opinion, too. I don't think that The Lord of the Rings is that good of a book. Sorry, I just don't think it's that well written. All right, cheers. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.